will make it very clear that lines 20 through 22, I strongly concur with your 2008 project team. Is it indeed worthy of commendation? Mr. Chair, I move House Resolution.
No, we don't have enough people in the room.
Oh, that's
so.
Right.
The question is simply, do we want to do this? And we don't have to do this. We had discussed this earlier in session. This is the vehicle in which we can express an opinion if we want to. It's not negative if we don't. It's just an opportunity if we want to. It's the will of the committee. I'm not pushing it.
Mr. Chair, I know a lot of work has gone into, at least from our level, and with your efforts, be very commendable to try to hold the agencies accountable and ensure that, to the best of our ability, they are in full compliance and ready to roll when the clock turns midnight and end of December this coming year, this year. I'd be happy to give a courtesy vote to move this along, but I would like to have a chance to sleep on it too.
No, we can bring this back. It is not my intention to. This is truly whether we want to, as a committee, move to the floor with an expression in terms of either to assure the voters with that you know we reviewed the issue. And, I mean, if this isn't the correct wording, we can change the wording in it in terms of, because I don't want to express false hopes. I don't think this does. I think this says that essential services will be there. They have contingency plans. They're working on contingency plans. That's not to say that there will not be glitches. There will not be problems that come forward. So we don't have to do anything today on this. I'd be more comfortable bringing it back. I'd much rather have full support rather than courtesy support, and we can discuss it.
Full support. I think that there is a good argument to be made for doing this. I think that there's a lot of stuff flying around out there, and will continue to fly around out there and build. And in some way, shape, or form, we can express our work over the last 3 years on this issue, as well as the work I think might be worth the process.
What I've just heard was a volunteer, maybe polling members and understanding in terms of maybe the wording that needs to...
In my spare time, no problem.
In your spare time, by next week.
Jason.
Got it?
Sure.
Okay. That lets... Close work session on House Resolution 2. Thank you. Open a hearing on House Bill 2728, or a work session. Senator Decker.
Mr. Chair, I'm passing out dash for amendments. The original bill dealt with service fees charged on tickets. The dash for changes the language it takes off all the percentage restrictions and simply makes the bill that a service charge and a handling fee should be a service and handling fee, and that at public venues where the consumers have to the venues, that the other costs are just in the full price of the ticket. Venues and promoters are free to charge whatever the market will bear and whatever they want. It just is saying that, waters it down a bit by saying that service and handling fees should be service and handling fees, and the face value of the ticket should be all other costs. I would move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2728.
Representative Deckert moves the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2728. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simmons.
How will this affect organizations like Ticketmaster?
Representative Simmons, Ticketmaster would still be allowed, and the dash 4 amendments doesn't place any restrictions in terms of how much service and handling fees they can charge. They can charge $2, $5, $10, $15, $20 because we've taken out the percentage cap on of the original bill that they were allowed to charge in service and handling fees.
Okay, so on line 12 it says, your ticket seller shall include all charges imposed on the sale of a ticket in the face value of the ticket, of a ticket. Don't they do that already?
They don't. Testimony was that there was other costs being put into the service and handling fees, and so the line after that says that it does not apply to service charges. So service charges and handling fees, you could charge whatever, but other fees would go into the face value of the ticket.
Parties that testified on this, are they in agreement with the dash 4?
I would suggest no.
We had the fellow from the State Fair that was here, and
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
I think that if I'm reading this, oh, I see. Wait a minute, I better reread this. It's all charges imposed on the sale of a ticket and the face value of the ticket. This excludes, excluding service charges.
It takes out the cap so that one can charge whatever. It just says the service and handling fee should be at a publicly owned facility. The service and handling fee should be a service and handling fee. And you can charge whatever you want for that.
But members, we have people here who can testify on the bill.
That might be helpful, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you have a copy of the dash for us?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Conkling, representing Ticketmaster, and no, I do not have a copy of the dash 4 amendment.
For the record, I'm John McCoy, representing Oregon Fairs Association.
Go ahead, take a moment and put it on.
How long is it taking, Stephen? Mr. Chairman, again, I'm Gary Conkling for the record. I've had several conversations with Representative Deckert and with others, and attempted to convey the concern that we have with this particular provision, and recognizing, in fact, that it has taken out caps, which do deal with the variability of service and handling fees that can vary in amounts, sometimes in relationship to the venue, sometimes in relationship to the tickets. So we appreciate and want to thank him for recognizing the problem with the original construction of his proposal. The problem with this construction of the proposal is that both venues as well as promoters frequently receive remuneration through service or convenience fees, however you choose to call them. And whether they do or not is subject to individual contracts that are arrived at in a market competitive environment in which typically the venues compete for people, entertainers, to come to their venues. And while one can find examples someplace, it might seem to indicate a truism. The reality is that I could give you, for the Rose Garden, a list of service charges that are variable from event to event. Representative Deckert expressed an interest in the Elton John concert, for example. just to give you a hint, because I called them at the noon hour today because I wanted to find out just what the service charges are. You know, if I went myself to a G.I. Joe's and I paid cash for my Elton John ticket, my convenience fee would be $5.50. If I gave them a credit card, it'd be $6. If I called them up and asked them to mail me the tickets, it would be $6.50 plus a $4 handling charge. Now, to say that anybody knows what's totally in those amounts means that they know what the individual contract is that the promoter, the venue operator, and in this case Ticketmaster, negotiated as part of the arrangement by which Elton John will perform on a night certain in the Rose Garden. And it's variable, and it's done by contract, and it's done in a competitive environment. What you are essentially doing here is regulating ticket prices. You are regulating what a ticket price must cover. I don't know who the regulating authority is. I don't know what the sanctions are. I don't know what the cost of either the inspection or the sanctions would be. It's a kind of, in the abstract, good idea, and I appreciate from a consumer you would like to know, but from a venue operator or from a ticket vendor, this would be very difficult to live with and compete.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again for the record, John McCulley, Oregon Fairs Association. I think you heard from the director of the Oregon State Fair the issue similar to what Mr. Conklin has just explained, that when they negotiate a contract under the current system that exists, the actor, the entertainer, gets all of the ticket revenue, and the venue makes whatever it's going to make on the other fees and charges that it's able to work out. So what this would in essence do would be to force them in their negotiations, if there is such a thing, with acts in Nashville or New York or wherever, to try to explain that they can no longer provide all of the ticket revenue, that there's got to be some other mechanism. And I think they would be in a very difficult position just because of the way those contracts have been written historically to be able to do that and get the money they need to be able to be the site for many of the acts. And that's the biggest concern.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevens.
So what you're saying is that we might run the risk of making Oregon non-competitive. We would have no Elton John concerts or things if we restrict the financial end of being able to actually make these things happen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simmons, again for the record, I'm Gary Conkling. I don't know whether I could say that we wouldn't get them or not. All I'm saying is that it would make it more difficult for us to compete for them in terms of covering the costs and the margins of the promoter and the venue. And representing the ticket vendor, we aren't the people that decide the terms of the contract. We're usually the people that are told the terms of the contract.
Can I just ask a question based on that? My curiosity is for Elton John, I think that's a good example of why, and we just spoke about this this afternoon in Spokane, the service and handling fee just simply is $2.50 or $3. Is there a unique situation in Portland? And in terms of, I guess the prior point, is that within the language in Section 2 here, you're free to charge whatever. There's no constraint on what you could charge in a service and handling fee. You could charge $15. So the G.I. Joe's situation, if I went down to Elton John and this statute was in effect, you could still charge $10.50 on that service and handling fee. So it wouldn't affect that, as I read it, at all.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Deckard, as to Spokane, the example that you gave me, I really don't know. I have no idea, other than whatever it is, it's the subject of the contract that was written between the promoter, the venue, and the ticket person, as well as Mr. John, who was represented by a performer. What this seems to say, and again, I'm taking it at what it says, is that you talk about a service charge, but you then say that the face value of a ticket must include all charges imposed on the sale of a ticket. And by that, I assume you mean the venue profit as well as whatever profit the promoter might make. And your assertion is that we must put that on the face value of the ticket, and as a ticket vendor, we don't get to decide that. If somebody comes to us and say, we've decided to bring Elton John to this venue, and we want you to be the ticket writer, we don't get to say, and by the way, the ticket price is going to be the full cost of the deal. They tell us what the deal is, and we negotiate for our particular cut. That's how the world works. Maybe it should work differently, but the fact that we might not do it the way the industry does it probably isn't going to change the industry.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Stevens?
You've had a chance to read the dashboard. As Governor Deckard indicates, it doesn't move the cap on what those extra fees can be. Can you comment on the dashboards any further?
Mr. Chair, John McCulley again for the record, Oregon Fairs Association. It would appear that if indeed the service charges are not or can be outside the face value of the ticket, that might help a ticket vendor. But for the venue itself, where their, quote, profit is, and it has to be included in the face value of the ticket, I think that is a disadvantage for them and makes it much more difficult for them to get the benefits that they now are able to get under the system that exists.
So, if I may, Mr. Chair, so if a ticket is, say, $15 plus a $5 fee, that makes the price of the ticket, in effect, $20. And if the ticket's not printed $20, you don't get the extra. You don't get the extra $5. You only charge $15 for it. So you have to negotiate what all these fees were going to be before the tickets were printed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simmons, yes, you do that, but you do that with folks that are a little closer to home than with some artists trying to renegotiate the contract as to what percentage of that face value of the ticket would then actually go to the venue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simmons, if I might follow on to that. If, for example, the contract with a certain entertainer is that they get 100% of the face value of the ticket, the fact that we as the ticket vendor are subject to this law in Oregon might make us non-competitive for that person to come here if the venue said, well, why would I want to have that act here? I can't make any money off it.
I have a question when you're done following.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I am curious, President Deckard's comment that in Spokane the fee is a whole lot less, as to what is different there. And it appears to me that it may bear some further examination if you were of a mind to hold the bill till next week, maybe later in the week. Allow time for that examination and investigation to take place so we can see what's different and what could perhaps be figured out here.
Mr. Chair,
as I originally heard the bill the first time, I was, couldn't imagine going there. But, as I see, it's amended a little more of that concept. It makes sense that whatever the fees are, somebody pays that bill, and then, if it costs something that would handle the ticket, that percentage either. But I do feel we need to have more information. I'm afraid it won't come quick enough, to be able to meet the deadlines that we have, before us. So I really do want to know if this is handled differently everywhere, or as you've described, that is pretty universal across the country, and that promoters wouldn't want to have the potential, can only do 6 events and they've got 12 requests and they didn't want to fool around with Oregon's method they just take the deals that are straightforward, and that we might lose some events. But on the other hand, you know, if things are done differently, and if we can say that you've got to pay $25 to the act, and there's $25 in the deal for everybody else, and it costs $10 to process the ticket, that's a $50 ticket and a $10 processing fee. You know, that seems like, you know, you can make your contract. And I don't know enough, you know, about your business to see that you can't possibly arrange, you know, a deal like that. It seems like that would be straightforward, but I'm, you know, there's got to be certain ways you do every different industry. And so, whereas I'm not comfortable with where we're at in terms of how we calculate those, I think I am interested in seeing that come forward, and I have talked to Representative Deckard about you know, his willingness to cooperate with that research. I think it might take some time before we get that there, and so that I would normally want to, you know, pass something from here that is clean and done and something we want to stand by. But in this case, I'm willing to, you know, pass the bill forward, but with the understanding that we are going to need more information, and that if we cannot do it effectively, quote, you know, in the way that Mr. Deckard is asking, I think that I've described it clearly, where we pay the act what they want, the promoters do what they want, that's a ticket price. If we can't do that, then it should die on the Senate side. So I'm willing to pass it forward and let them get that information. I trust them to be able to come to that conclusion, and Representative Deckard has indicated that that he'd be cooperative with that. Yeah. Soliloquy. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I understand that I'm not quite that comfortable at this point.
Mr. Chair, what I would be willing to do, listening to Representative Sumner's request, is adopt the Dash 4. If it's the will of the committee to wait, then I'm willing to do that. The Dash 4, take out the 15% cap. So that makes it obviously, the flexibility and freedom is now gone from a restrictive cap, which I think there's some defense to. I'd be willing to wait and work on Representative Simmons' request for more information. I'd also be willing, I think Representative Simmons' point, I've moved the bill forward, and I think I expressed this to Mr. Conkling this afternoon. I'm not interested in doing anything that puts us in a competitive disadvantage and would kill my own bill if it moved to the House. If it really got down to that, and I would involve Representative Simmons in the process as much as you would like, that it got down to that point, and I would just kill my own bill, ask the Senate not to hear it or do whatever. I do think that there's merit to the idea of having the full cost of the ticket and the face value of the ticket and having a service handling fee be that without the restrictions. So it's the will of the committee. If we want to move it forward, I would pledge that, based on Representative King's point, that if need be, we just don't move the bill in the Senate at all, it comes out to really being a competitive disadvantage.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Gary Conkling, let me be as express as I can, because Representative Deckard made that pledge to me, and he's quite truthful. On behalf of Ticketmaster and on behalf of the Oregon Arena Corporation, if you pass this bill, it will make our venues in this state non-competitive for contracts. That's our feeling.
Mr. Chair. Representative Crummel.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Conkling?
Certainly.
If you request price, you know, so everybody's property change and everything is within the face value of the ticket, does that put us at a competitive disadvantage? Because in terms of negotiating with the artist or with the act, that it would mean that they would be disclosed to them what the process of the venue, what the process of the promoter and everything are, or would it just be a disadvantage because they want to get as much money as they can out of each ticket sale, but they want to keep the prices as low as they can so that lots of people will come. I'm trying to sort that out because I do understand and I appreciate what Representative Deckard is trying to do. You know, when you follow up, we get a ticket price. You want to know that that's a total price and not, you know, every, I mean, now anymore, but what questions do you know to ask them so that you're not what I've been used to actually do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, with respect to the ticket vendors, they basically write the tickets based on what the contracts are that are arrived at between venues and promoters. And I think you're correct. The negotiation has several layers to it. And where promoters negotiate with artists to get opportunities to either be exclusive or at least an agent to try to sell those artists at certain dates. In turn, the promoters, when they then have some control over some dates, negotiate with the venue operators. And after all of that's done, then the promoter, typically, or in some cases, depending upon whether the venue operator has an arrangement with the ticket vendor, the ticket vendor is told what their part of it is. And they're usually at kind of the end. Where the non-competitiveness part comes is the extent that you regulate what you can do with ticket prices. You limit the ability to engage in third-party ad-interest contracts between people. That's what this is all about. And however admirable it might be to know on the face of the ticket, it just covers everything except for whatever the ticket vendor has. That isn't how the business typically works. I mean, I don't know how much more simply I can make it. I mean, that's just the problem, and maybe it should. We talked when the witnesses were here about making sure that when the customer calls, they know what the total price of the pay is, and at least in Ticketmaster's case, they do that. They fully disclose and make sure that people are aware there is such a charge.
Thank you. We have a motion on the table to adopt the Dash 4 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll on the adoption of the Dash 4 amendments to the House Bill 2728.
Decker?
Aye.
Kane?
Aye.
Crummell?
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Simmons?
I vote aye on adoption of the Dash 4 amendments. If it was the motion to go to the floor, I would vote
aye. Dash 4 amendments are adopted. Let's close the work session on House Bill 2728. And that without, I guess, Jason, have we covered everything? We get through all the bills?
Yeah.
You've gotten through all the bills. We will talk about this and bring it back another later day. Without objection, we are adjourned.